Totally Football Show. Today, Champions League drama. Prime viewing at Spurs with their amazing comeback and a blue-blooded battle at the Bernabeu while Liverpool see Naples and tie and now face a do-or-die trip to Salzburg. Should they sign Jamie Vardy? Because he knows all about downing Red Bull. There's a big salute to all the midweek heroes, from Lukaku to Lewandowski, from Dybala to De Ball Boy, and a look ahead to the weekend's Premier League action. What could be our last chance to see Unai Emmanuel Kike and other endangered species? It's all coming up in the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Big hello to you, listener. Thanks for joining us today on board the pod. We have Julien Laurens.
Hello, James.
Hi, Julien. You're just back from Paris.
Indeed, yes.
You also had a stint in Liverpool Monday and the goal show midweek.
It's been a busy week.
Busy. Bom dia to Natalie Jedra.
Bom dia.
From ESPN Brazil. And also here, Lindsay Hooper.
Shall I try an accent? Good day. How are y'all doing?
That's really nice. Is that Wolverhampton?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Fantastic. And accentastic Pat Nevin, who's been busy this week, haven't you, Pat?
Yeah.
Every week.
I'll try the Scottish accent. When I try and put on a Scottish accent, I get it wrong.
Right.
So I won't try.
Okay, well, the accent was on drama midweek in the Champions League. Eight teams now through to the last 16. Eight places still to be sorted. But group winners are Barcelona, PSG, Bayern, Man City and Juve. Joining them in the next round, Real Madrid, Spurs and RB Leipzig. Leipzig, for the first time in all of their long, long history. So many big stories out there. What stood out for you, Natalie?
I really enjoyed all the excitement with Chelsea-Valencia. It was a great match.
Mm.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, the last 10 minutes we were
crazy.
Just,
yes.
It's like a basketball game.
Absolutely, absolutely. 100%. But exciting the same way. Chelsea with a bit of a problem. They're defending. We'll talk more about that match, but it really caught my eye.
Right. Lewandowski was doing his Lewandowski things. Four goals in 14 minutes. His numbers this season are just crazy. He's now on 27 goals in 20 matches this season. What was your favourite goal of the midweek, though, Lindsay?
Just because they're so unusual, probably Dejan Lovren scoring.
Yeah? Really?
Yeah, they're very, very unusual at Liverpool. So I'll hold on to that one.
Story-wise, but in terms of skill?
In terms of skill, they were obviously better. Lewandowski, by the way, tweeting out afterwards, "I'm addicted to scoring goals."
Yeah.
That's what any goal scorer wants to say, isn't
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, isn't it?
It has to be Dybala, though.
The Dybala.
The angle from behind the free kick, which I don't think many television channels have showed enough.
Right.
But that somehow, as someone was filming from the stands, I believe, from the one I've saw, it's just incredible.
Right. Do you think there's just a chance he might be a better free kick option than Cristiano Ronaldo?
Let me think. Yes.
Yes.
I think there's plenty as well.
That was pretty nice.
Squad.
Papu Gomez's goal, the nutmeg and finish for Atalanta.
Sarabia's goal was nice too, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like it when you talk to me like this.
That whole game, Mark Jelberg saying, was the Real Madrid PSG fixture the ultimate example of a dangerous 2-0 lead? Real were cruising and then Benzema tempt fate and hey presto, 2-2 before you know it.
Yeah, I'm still not convinced that 2-0 is a dangerous score.
It was for Olympiakos,
right. And it was for Real Madrid as well. On PSG's point of view, it was a very good result, but a very bad performance, which sometimes happened to big clubs. And I think you need a bit of that now and again, where they were quite disappointing in the way they play collectively. And in the end, somehow, even miraculously, to be fair, they managed to get a point.
In terms of their bad performances in Spain, though, nowhere near the top 10 for PSG as they go through as group winners. Barcelona, they did Borussia Dortmund. Messi with his 700th appearance, and his stats are 237 assists in those 700 games and 613 goals. Just extraordinary. In that group, but match day 6 is going to be fascinating because Messi and company will be going to San Siro to take on Inter, where Lukaku and Martinez are looking, woof, tasty, no?
Incredible. I mean, the assist from for the last goal, the outside of the left foot from Lukaku for the volley from Lautaro was just incredible. They play so well together.
Yeah. The commentary on Lukaku's first Champions League goal was pretty incredible as well.
It was, yeah.
Because you only need one striker if that striker's Erling Haaland, who was only on the bench this time around for Red Bull Salzburg as they took on Genk, came off it, became the first teenager to score in all five of his first 5 Champions League fixtures. He's got 8 goals so far in the Champions League this season, 27 for the season in total in 18 matches.
And he should have 9, obviously.
Well, that's true, because that other goal was disallowed.
And the refereeing, especially on Wednesday night, was just atrocious everywhere.
Oh, yeah, it was
absolutely.
Inter, VAR in that Slavia Prague game. I mean, even the Lyon game, the Liverpool, even Liverpool-Napoli on the Lovren goal, I think there's a shout for something. But that goal disallowed for Ireland, the first one he scored, was just, there's nothing, there's no offsides.
Right. There were a couple of quite extraordinary examples where, for example, Inter had to score what they thought was their second goal and instead found VAR calling back for a penalty to the opposition, Slavia, at the other end. And in the Real Madrid to Paris Saint-Germain game as well, hey Jules.
Yeah, the push from Idrissa Gueye on Marcelo, which was a very gentle push, I thought. Even being
so
a bit biased.
So PSG thought they had a penalty and
a red card
was sent off.
Yeah, which then they went to VAR and people thought that they would rescind, well, they would cancel the red card but keep the penalty, and instead he went back to a foul from Gueye on Marcelo.
Well, it's nice that you actually mentioned when VAR goes well. So that's 2 occasions where it's worked a treat. So that's good news.
I wasn't mentioning that in a positive light.
I know you weren't, but I was being really ironic. However, I think it's true. I think it's really good that they're getting it right.
So you're happy with things happening, them being stopped and rewound sort of 30 seconds or so of action?
If you get the decisions right, I'm absolutely fine.
We need it clearer, though, with the phases of play. How far back can you keep taking it?
That's the trickiest part, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
The one thing there, just we get bored to death with VAR. Was it Friday last week? Friday, I think it was. And I was writing a piece saying, do you know what, just to annoy everyone, I think VAR's working really, really well, and I think it'll really annoy everyone, and I think when the stats come out, it'll bear me out, you know, expecting to get abuse. Stats come out the next morning. 9% increase in correct decisions. Bad news, guys. VAR's actually working.
Working for what? This
making
is,
more correct decisions.
It's a philosophical debate, and we're on different sides of it, so there's not much point getting into it. For me, it doesn't matter if a decision's right or wrong. You can't stop a flowing game and expect it to have the same appeal.
I think it will have the same appeal if you just watch people are still tuning in, people are still talking about it. I understand that it's a change game, it's a different game. I would ask everybody else just the same question. If you're at your job and you know something's gone viciously wrong, but they decide not to look at it because they don't fancy looking at it and you get sacked, that's not really good, is it? You should be fairness in the world.
Depends what your job is. If you're, say, for example, doing a production at the theatre and they keep stopping the production every time someone makes a mistake, they rewind it a minute or two or even have a 3-minute pause while they work out if somebody's
hit their
cue.
James, that's the best argument I've heard against that argument. Well done. Okay. Well done.
That is very good.
All righty. Well, let's move on then after this, quickly before Pat gets his comeback in, to Spurs Olympiacos.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Wow. Saturday, Spurs getting their first away win in ages under their new manager. And then bingo, Tuesday, he gives them an actual come-from-behind victory. Typical Dao Mourinho football performance, though.
Well, the occasion as a whole, that's what I wanted to start with. This is his first home match in the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Did anyone even recognise that? I felt like the supporters didn't. There wasn't much of a fanfare, perhaps under his instruction, I don't know.
There was in the media, but at the stadium there was nothing like that.
No, it felt very flat, and it didn't feel like a manager's first home match. Did you think the same?
He was not introduced, which usually, for a first home game, whoever is appointed, you know, even briefly, the stadium speaker brings him on the side of the pitch and said, for his home debut, so-and-so. But
yeah, even with players.
Yeah.
And you still saw the Argentina flag with Mauricio Pochettino right by Mourinho.
Right
that was
him.
Interesting. That was interesting.
We know why, though. It's kind of clear why they didn't do that. Because there was a half a chance there'd be a number of boos. Because a number of people are not delighted about it at Tottenham Hotspur that he's actually come there. So to bring him in, big fanfare and a kind of insipid response. That's not what you want.
I think that performance has gone some way. I think it was in one of the articles that I read, doing lots of reading around this match. I think it might have even been in the Daily Mail, and it said the relationship between Mourinho and the fans will be a slow burner. And I think that probably is the right way to address it. It is going to be a slow burner. But even talking to fans around the stadium, I was there all day yesterday, the general consensus was, we've got no complaints, carry on as it is, we shall see. But clearly there was more optimism than like a week ago. And so already that Mourinho effect starting to trickle through. And Dele Alli was a lot of the response that I got as well. And I thought that was clear in the performance against Olympiacos, that he had another revival, it seemed. And that is a player that everyone's identifying seems to be lifted from Mourinho being there.
Well, having said all that, 15 minutes in, it seemed we'd like fast forward to season two of Mourinho at Spurs, with him looking ashen-faced on the sideline, the players stumbling around, not able to get themselves together. And then the turnaround, Natalie.
I think we have to be careful talking about Mourinho effect. Mm-hmm. I think people sometimes they get carried away. It's just two matches. Spurs, if you look at the match like properly, Spurs made a lot of mistakes that they have been doing defensively, especially. Okay, Dele Alli is playing better, but he hasn't gone back to his old form yet, so we have to take it easy with that as well. I think we will see Mourinho's effect with time, but now I think it's too early to talk about his impact and things like that. We have to take it easy, honestly.
And okay. both West Ham and Olympiacos are really bad teams, right?
Yes.
Let's not forget that. They didn't beat Real Madrid and Bayern Munich. You know, it was like Olympiacos had 1 point, finished against Spurs in the return fixture, but they lost to West Ham Belgrade twice. I mean, come on, you know, it's like, and West Ham are just dire too. So, but good on him. I think the momentum, and I felt it was very much the Jose Mourinho show once again, a bit like on Saturday at West Ham. Before the game, he stayed halfway down the tunnel when the players were warming up, so fans could still see him and he could do little winks and little smiles. And then there was the press conference after the game, the line about Amazon, which obviously he was prepared to, you know, he'd prepared for it because he knew someone would ask, okay, what did you tell them at halftime? So all that, which I like a lot. I think he's brilliant, but
he's good.
He felt really much like that.
You must mention his tactics, though, the okay. tactical change. It would be unfair not to mention the fact that he'd made a change that no other manager would make at that time in the match.
You don't and think it, anyone else would have done that 2-0 down, playing so badly?
But right.
Just tell me who would. Who's done it recently?
But did he make the right change or did he start with the wrong team?
That's a good question.
No, he's done that often in his career. He's done it with Manchester United, he's done it with Chelsea before. You put out something, it's not working, and it may be for a variety of reasons. Sort it out, realise it's not working, and make the change as soon as you possibly can. He's done it time and again. There'll be people out there listening to this and saying, yeah, so-and-so did it, so-and-so did it. Who's done it as often as Jose Mourinho? And who's done it as often as Jose Mourinho, and it worked. So, I mean, give him a little bit of credit for that.
Yeah, he deserves credit for sure.
Oh yeah,
definitely. But the contrast between the contrast between the first half and the second half was just incredible. And and they also were a bit lucky in the sense that their first goal, Spurs' first goal, comes from a huge mistake defensively from
that had a major bearing in the turnaround, as much as the swap of Eric Dier to Christian Eriksen. So, we're all hungry to get a read on what the Spurs special one marriage is going to bring. Do we have any clear idea from this, or is it kind of hard to tell?
I think it is, like Natalie said, it's too early. It is going to be that slow burner that I mentioned, and we're going to have to figure out how that goes. They've got Bournemouth next in the Premier League, and Bournemouth, when they played Wolves last time out, they didn't seem convincing in that performance. So I don't think we're going to really ascertain too much from Bournemouth at the moment. They seem to be in a bit of a blip. But of course, the game after that, he goes back to Manchester United, to Old Trafford. We should be able to see and gauge quite a lot from that match. I wanted to mention as well the Jurgen Klopp influence, because we discussed this just after his appointment on the Totally Football Show. It was all about Mourinho and the way that he's going to change and adapt his style and how he perhaps will be a bit more Klopp. Well, we saw that with the ball boy, didn't we? Because that happened for Liverpool, where the ball boy acted quickly, gave a ball to Trent Alexander-Arnold in the Champions League. We saw it happen here at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And it felt like there was something in the back of Mourinho's head that was like, oh, this worked for Klopp. This will work for me. So you've got all of those images around the world now of him, you know, patting the ball boy on the back and saying that he was going to go and get him down the tunnel. By the way, I hope that they extend that invite to the next match, because apparently he'd gone, hadn't he?
They couldn't find him.
They couldn't find him.
I would be heartbroken.
Yeah. I was going to get you in the dressing room, but you've gone.
Well, is he going to get his teeth done next, do you think?
Could be.
All right, Natalie, you're actually going along to Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Yes, I'll be there.
For the Bournemouth match. Bournemouth, who, as you mentioned, Lindsay, haven't been in the best of form, lost their last two. In fact, in their last five games, they've only beaten Man United. What's your angle going into this one, do you think, Natalie?
I think it's... to see more of what Mourinho can bring to this team in terms of formation. Because I think this is going to be interesting. The first two matches, he maintained the same team, and then he had the switch for the Eric Dier, Eriksen. And I don't know if he will have a more aggressive approach against Bournemouth. Maybe, probably, it would make more sense if you look at Bournemouth's form and their 11th at the table. And I think it's going to be interesting. And to see, of course, the relationship with the fans evolving. That's always something.
All right. Well, Spurs are through, and Man City too, who we'll talk about a little bit later on. But both Europa League and Champions League holders are facing a nervous wait to see if they can book up their place in the last 16. We'll talk about them, Chelsea and Liverpool, after this. Natalie, you talked about that crazy game away at the Mestalla.
Yes.
And the remarkable finish. It ends up 2-2. Chelsea now must win against Lille, or at least match what Valencia get. Fortunately for Frank Lampard and company, Valencia have to go away to Ajax. So still pretty confident about Chelsea's chances.
Oh, yeah. I think so, yeah.
Lille.
Lille have played well. Even on Wednesday night against Ajax, they played really well. They had expected goals really high, and they could have scored easily two or three goals. They could have conceded more than two as well.
Right. 2-0. Previous clash with Valencia, they conceded three goals in the last 10 minutes. Chelsea beat them 2-1 there. I don't know, but yeah, football.
Yeah, I know. Chelsea, I think, will win and qualify, but it won't be as easy as maybe it looks like.
Okay. Chelsea's clash with West Ham this Saturday. How easy does that look?
Well, if I was a Chelsea fan, I would be very concerned about Abraham's injury. Yes, because I think if you look at the team as a whole, in terms of options, there's a huge gap between Tammy and the other two options for a center forward.
What?
You're saying that in front of a French
World Cup winner? This is his time.
Yes, there is a big gap, because I think the way that Tammy reads the match, the way that he reads the action, it's completely different from Giroud, and especially from Batshuayi. So if you look at the other positions, I think it's more balanced, but in the centre forward.
Okay, what's the difference with Batshuayi? Because Giroud, I think I understand, because he's a big target man. Tammy's not the same kind of player. But Batshuayi, how does he fit into that kind of spectrum of forward?
Okay, so Tammy is the best finisher. So Batshuayi is... He scores goals eventually, but he misses a lot of chances. And the way that he sees the action, he doesn't have the same reading of the game as Tammy. Tammy is more intelligent in making movements, and can't see that in Batshuayi.
Sure, he's going to be a huge miss, but the beauty of this Chelsea side, and Pat, you correct me if I'm wrong because you're closer to the club than me, but is the options that Frank now has. If you've got a target man like Giroud or Batshuayi that can hold up the ball, okay, Tammy and his goals will certainly be missed, but this is an opportunity for someone like Mason Mount to come in and for the goals to come from that phase back in play. And I would imagine that's something that he's got players there that are hungry, that want to get some time.
Well, Tammy's done brilliant, and he's going to be a phenomenal player. I don't even go to be slightly missed. And I know it sounds really, really harsh, that I'm not really bothered about it. There's only one player I would be concerned about, Chelsea.
Conte.
I think the point... No.
No?
Could have missed him at the start of the season. He did really well.
Jorginho?
It's Jorginho by a million miles. I mean, as soon as Jorginho goes off the pitch, and in the game against Valencia, Chelsea just could not go on the ball.
Yeah.
And every time he's on the pitch, Chelsea control the games and make chances. He's made mistakes, but he keeps on getting on the ball. He's been absolutely astonishing. Kovacic says, wait for it. He scored at last.
He couldn't believe it, I think.
He's actually improved. And Tammy's better in technical play. You're 100% right. I agree with completely. Batshuayi will score goals. His goals per minutes in the pitch is just off the scale still.
Just to mention that whoever is up front for Chelsea this week will be facing Roberto. So, you know, there's that.
But
the one, if you've not watched Chelsea recently, get out there and watch the right fullback, Reece James. Honestly, just get onto this as early as you possibly can. Many people are on it already. He is Branislav Ivanovic already. He is one of the best crossers of ball in English football.
Yeah,
he
now some are saying that he's even beyond Trent Alexander-Arnold, which sounds like heresy.
It's an argument for it already.
Really? Is he at Ziyech levels?
It's Steady on, give him a few weeks. Okay. It's only been entry. Honestly, I've very rarely seen somebody walk in. There was a moment in the game the other night there, and he must have put in about 7, 8, 9 really brilliant crosses between the defender and the goalkeeper. But it was in his own half, and you've seen some players, and please throw in names if you can. There's two players closing them down, and they've tried to get the ball off him, and he did not panic, and he went, he shoved them off of this to say, how dare you try and get the ball off me? He's a kid. And he is so confident. He is so strong. He's such a good player. He's going to be an international fullback for a decade. He's brilliant.
West Ham have Issa Diop out suspended. How bad is their third choice keeper? Who is West Ham's third choice keeper?
The famous David Martin, who's 33 years of age, who then previously played for Millwall and MK Dons and was at Liverpool a long time ago as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
Right. They've got a problem in goal, but I think, and this is heresy, can I ask, chuck it around the table, please take this away from me, because it hurts me to say it now. The two players they need to get out of their team, and it's Yarmolenko, unbelievably talented, and on the other side, left wing,
Felipe Anderson.
And it's a real shame because he's unbelievably talented as well.
Both of whom looked electric last season. Exactly. What's happened this time around? Have they just fallen out of love with it?
Do you know, if you're not playing, you're playing with nine men. It's one of those ones. And seeing you're down the bottom of the table, you just cannot do it. You cannot do that. It's too dangerous. Took both of them off against Tottenham Hotspur and look at the way the team played after that. Everyone's really busy watching Jose. Have a look at their team when those two go off. And they're brilliant players. And may I put hands up here as someone who's seen as a skillful player myself. But you've got to work as well.
Right.
And those two just do not work enough off the ball for a team that's down the bottom.
Yeah, especially with a fixture like this. Yeah. One that West Ham haven't won away at the Bridge since 2002. September 2002, the goal scorers were Jermaine Defoe and Paulo Di Canio for the Hammers against the Chelsea side managed by Claudio Ranieri. What was number one, Jules? That's right, it was Dilemma. By Nelly.
Was it?
Nelly Rowland, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Great song.
Great song.
Great song. Hey, meanwhile, Liverpool, that 1-1 at Anfield with Napoli, which means, of course, that Liverpool now need to go to Salzburg, mighty Red Bull Salzburg, and get a win. A really remarkable story, this. Earlier in the day, Napoli's youth team had taken on their Liverpool counterparts and lost 7-0. And we were kind of wondering if something similar was going to happen between the senior sides. Napoli's form, just a reminder, I know they've beaten Liverpool back in Naples on Matchday 1, but their form had collapsed after that. And the last Champions League game, the 1-1 draw at home to Salzburg, then saw the infamous mutiny where the players refused to go into a kind of punitive training ground retreat for the rest of the week and told the club, so the club responded they were going to take legal action. There's talk of fines of €0.33 million for some of the players. All the top players have been told that they have no future at the club. And when you think of them arriving at Anfield, of all places, with that kind of breakdown between squad and management, and for example, the captain Insigne didn't even travel because he had a bruised elbow. Kind
it's
of
a good excuse not to play,
yeah. So it was just remarkable. But the really strange thing was that they seemed very composed in this match. It was Liverpool who actually looked out of sorts.
They did. They didn't seem at the races for this one. There was a few things that happened. Fabinho, who's been quite key to what they do, in the same sense that you were talking about Jorginho at Chelsea, he got injured pretty early on. And they really missed him not being part of that team. And I felt that Robertson was below par, his crossing. We talked about great crossing, but some of the corners, he wasn't actually beating the first man. There were some great runs from him, but I just felt that his delivery wasn't as good.
Right. And of course, they didn't have Trent Alexander-Arnold in the starting lineup.
Yeah, Joe Gomez was in his place.
Yeah, Ruleng saying, without Trent, Liverpool looking toothless. And how important is it going to be for Liverpool over this hectic period that they keep him and Robertson fit?
I think without him, they average 1.7 point per game.
Without Trent?
Yeah, and with him, it's like 2.5. And I'm always a bit cautious about those because it always depends who you face. You know, if you play rubbish teams without him, obviously you could still win, and etc. But I think you saw yesterday that in his absence, there's a lack of fluidity, especially on that right-hand side.
Right.
Not just the crosses that Pat mentioned, because he's obviously so good in the deliveries, but even in terms of how the team play collectively, the diagonals between the two fullbacks, which they use a lot, hardly happened because Joe Gomez, I don't think can do a diagonal of 50 yards. So.
Okay. Well, you mentioned the issue of what Tammy Abraham's injury is going to mean. We don't know how long it's going to be, but the impact it could have on Chelsea. What about Fabinho going off like that, Natalie, for Liverpool?
Well, it's bad news, of course, because we've been talking about how decisive December is going to be, a key month for Liverpool with all the fixtures. It's the first in 12 matches in 36 days, and you already have an injury involving a player as Fabinho. I think the thing about Liverpool's midfield is that Jurgen, he managed to create a balance there. A while ago, we were always discussing if Liverpool should have a more creative player, and they don't need that right now. But it involves Fabinho as well, because the role that he plays, of course, Jurgen will find other ways to find this balance again. But nobody does this role as well as Fabinho. And I think it messes up a little bit the balance that he found on the midfield. That's why it's so bad, Fabinho's injury.
What do you need to do a Fabinho?
I agree with that. They don't have anyone with his profile. You could put Henderson there, but he doesn't have the same physicality, for example, and even reading of the game in terms of how to break down the opposition's attack than Fabinho has. Fabinho worked so hard to get in the team because Klopp said you'll have to wait and learn and look and observe, and then you will get in. That's why he didn't play between August when the season starts, in his first season, and mid-October. But he was always very clear from Klopp's point of view that he was just waiting for Fabinho to learn the way they were playing and exactly what he had to do to put him in the team, and he never left the team since. And I think he would have to find a different way of playing without Fabinho, because it just won't be the same whether you put Wijnaldum or Henderson or
Milner can play there,
but it would be a different way of playing because no one of them can do what Fabinho does.
It's a slightly unfair thing to say, but last time we were in here, my argument was, and many people's argument is, just keep Van Dijk fit and you'll be okay.
Hmm.
He was unfit for, I think, 5 seconds of that game. They lost a goal. It tells you something about how big he is for them. As soon as he was slightly injured in that little tackle, the way he fell, they just were opened up. So that would be a worry. I think they'll manage to get by.
But for example, Fabinho is already off when Mertens scored the goal. Van Dijk wins the header.
Mm.
There's no one on the second ball. And then it's a far too easy pass through to Mertens, who times he's run really well and he's onside and etc. But I really believe that Fabinho had been on the pitch, Napoli would have never scored that goal. They might have scored another goal, but not the one they scored on Wednesday night.
Pat, if you're putting Jorginho as your number one, can't lose this guy player at Chelsea. Mm-hmm. At Liverpool, who would be top of that list? Would it be Trent?
It's Van Dijk.
Van Dijk, yeah, right.
Without
sorry,
even yeah, a second thought, it would definitely
so
be Van
Dijk. So Van Dijk, then Trent, then...
Well, it's difficult after that. I mean...
Alisson?
I would worry long-term about Salah because there was so much, you know, dependent on them. There's a bit in me that's... I'm tiptoeing away from a player. You also have to mention Sadio Mane, but I'm so angry with him at the moment, I don't want to give him any positivity.
Why are you so angry then?
Because he's diving again. Uh-huh. I know, and he's been mentioned, Pep mentioned it the other week there, and don't hide it. He did it the other night there. It was horrendous.
Messi dived midweek. Did you see?
I didn't see that one. Yeah. That's unusual. Funny you should say that, because that's unusual, isn't it?
Yeah.
He does throw himself to the ground for Argentina. Doesn't tend to do it so much for Barca.
Klopp has never qualified Liverpool before match day 6 of the Champions League group stage,
right,
which is a worry, especially, as we said, with such a heavy fixture list, that it would have been so easy for them to almost put the B team going to Salzburg in 2 weeks' time and say, like, you know what, we've got so many games in the league and then the Club World Cup that we could do that. They won't be able to do that.
Well, again, we've been talking up this clash in Salzburg as being dangerous for Liverpool, and it is, but they are 3 points clear of Red Bull. How dangerous is it? How much should they be worried after the 4-3 and the scare that Red Bull gave them at Anfield?
No, I think they will be quite cautious going there. I think they will do the job. They probably would get a draw, which, you know, they can without problem. But the atmosphere is going to be incredible. It's a small stadium, it's a 25,000 seater stadium, but it will be a very hostile atmosphere. It would be great. Haaland, who didn't start on Wednesday because he was not properly fit, but he would surely be fit in 2 weeks' time.
Right.
And I think Jesse Marsh is a good enough manager to find a way of causing trouble like he did in the return fixture to Liverpool. So I think it's the idea of you can't rest anyone. You have to play your best team because you can't take any gambles or any risk of, like, imagine if they're out. If Liverpool are out in the group stage...
When was the last time the European champions went out after the group stage?
Would it be Chelsea...
After the Demeter?
Yeah, so they won it in 2012, and then the season after, they didn't go through to the last 16, but then went and won the Europa League with Benitez, I believe. All there right. might have been someone else since, but I think they're the last one.
Okay. They've got Brighton this weekend. Last time Brighton, Pat, won in the league at Anfield. Do you know when that was?
Jurassic period?
Similar. It was actually March 1982.
Just prior to my own arrival on Earth.
Yeah. What was number one as you entered this...
Was it ABBA or somebody like
no,
that?
No, it was Tight Fit with The Lion Sleeps Tonight. Which is nice.
82.
The big question for Brighton, can they get a win away? Just off the top of my head.
I'm going to that game, so I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, just like going to Liverpool for the fact that the atmosphere is almost always brilliant, although apparently it wasn't great.
No, it sounded really flat. I mean, we were watching on the monitors, but it did sound really flat.
Yeah, which is really unusual, because you always say that there's certain places on a Champions League night you just say, take them for granted, that's great.
You know? Monaco, for example.
Maybe not. Celtic Park is
Celtic
one of them.
Park, Celtic I was going to say that. Right. Can we talk Graham Potter's contract, please?
Yes.
Because this is, I feel like something must have been going on. Has someone tried to tap up Graham Potter so Brighton have given him this six-year contract? Because it stinks of Alan Pardew at Newcastle, doesn't it, when he got that eight-year deal?
Or David Moyes at United.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, and you think, wow, what is going on behind the scenes? Because although I feel that Brighton have improved, mm-hmm. they have looked pretty solid, they look like they could surprise anybody in this league, including the top teams, but 6 years.
Do you know, it's an odd thing. I remember someone telling me about the Pardew contract, and everyone thought, wow, 8 years. And then someone mentioned on the side, oh, there's a break clause, though. Which right. means it's not an eight-year contract. It means there's a break clause, which sometimes these contracts are, until you actually sit down and look at them and look at the detail of them, sometimes it's a PR thing that's thrown out.
Why would the club want it to sound like a six-year deal?
Maybe to get everybody up and excited about the fact that, you know, they're in the Premier League,
they're
doing okay.
Do players get excited by the notion of 6 years with the same
security?
Manager?
Security.
Okay.
Lots of people like security, you know, because if you think there's going to be a change of manager every year, say you're in the team, and you think the manager's in a kind of sticky wicket, you know, there's an uncertainty there because a new guy might not like you. There's that uncertainty. Get rid of that. But it does seem a bit odd. 6 years is a strange one.
Not least because if he does go, it'll mean a very fast.
Well, that
exactly.
And you have to think of those knock-on effects for a club, because Brighton, although they're going well this season, let's not even say next season, the season after, they could feasibly be in a relegation battle. It's a club that wasn't expected to be in the Premier League after so long away that... The knock-on, if you had a huge payout, could be massive.
If every single time a manager walks into your office, if you're doing an executive role and it's a new contract, the first question is, what's the payoff? That's nothing else about length of contract or anything else. That's the first question with him and his agent, right? So if you say it's a year and a half's worth of money or 2 years' worth of money or years' worth of money, you can talk 7-year, 10-year contracts all day long. The payoff is sorted and that's done first. And we all read these things, it's a 6-7-year contract. In reality, it's just not like it. It really isn't like
it. It's all about what you get when you go.
Exactly.
Because you won't last 6 years.
And you need a good agent. And if you've got the best agent, who clearly is Jose Mourinho's, because I worked it out the other day, he's been, when he was Chelsea twice, Real Madrid and Manchester United, have paid him £64 million to get lost. That's 64 million quid to get
it's
lost.
Huge money.
It's unbelievable. I mean, just to go away.
Just out of interest, do you think that's why he usually spends the second part of his stay at any club being as obnoxious as possible?
I know that's why some players do. That,
really?
That was quite a common thing with players. You basically want the next payday. So you hassle out to get your move so you can get paid up and get the next payday. That's quite common.
In terms of managers under pressure, though, do we think, I did ask that question, do you think any of these clubs... had been slightly tapping up Graham Potter? Because you've got, I perhaps wouldn't be the fit, but you've got Unai Emery under pressure. You've had Ralf Hasenhüttl at Southampton. We were talking about
Watford, Everton,
several managers.
West
Do you
Ham.
Think there was someone creeping around?
Very possibly, because those are all clubs who are eyeing up the man on their bench with big question marks in their minds. Let's talk about some of those clubs, Lindsay, after this.
I'm Jose Mourinho. I know a thing or two about being special. Getting a road named after you in your hometown, special. Winning the daily jackpot on Paddy Power Games, not special.
Understood, Jose. Yes, someone wins an average £40,000 jackpot every single day. So if you win, don't think you're special. Daily jackpots by Paddy Power Games. Jackpots must be awarded by 11 p.m. and vary from day to day. Jackpot is shared with other operators. Available on selected games. T's and C's at paddypower.com. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Thursday morning, and as we speak, Unai Emery, Marco Silva, Kike Sanchez Flores and Manuel Pellegrini are all still in charge, but situation pending at a lot of those positions, not least at Everton, who, like Liverpool, are battling for the championship, and this weekend they are at Leicester. Leicester, 5 wins in a row, best defence, second best attack. It's phenomenal, isn't it?
Do I have to talk about Everton now? And to some degree, I was up at the Everton game against Spurs, the one with the horrible injury. And that is the ugliest game in just about any way you describe it.
Which game was
this
that?
Season. Spurs came up against Everton. And it was, apart from the fact that for 80 minutes it was soporific, it was just awful. You're half asleep for the vast majority of it, and the fans had just chucked it.
Did you see, because there were some suggestions that they'd given up on even booing, but they'd certainly...
No, they had.
They'd got their booing back on this last weekend for the defeat against Norwich.
Yeah, they feel as if, I think they felt, a lot of the fans felt, look, it's going to happen now anyway, he's going to get the bump, so we don't need to worry about it too much. But they've been pounded into a kind of a torpor, and it's horrible to see it because, you know, having played there for years, I know what it can be like. And they're just waiting for something to get them going.
Just waiting for David Moyes to make his return.
The amount of Everton fans that say to me, anyone but David, which I'm gutted about. When you're biased, hold your hand up. I'm biased. He's a mate of mine, right? So I'll say that.
He did amazing.
If you look at over the period of time, he did better than just about anyone else who's in sort of recent history.
Right.
You have to always keep that in perspective.
Okay.
For me, it's really hard to understand Marco Silva's work, because when you talk to the players, they like him. They like the way that he works. They say that he's a guy who studies, who brings details to training. So it's really hard. And it's kind of frustrating because I had expectations seeing a guy such as Marco Silva really delivering in a club. But things are looking pretty...
Marquee players aren't, though, and I wondered, Pat, whether there's a situation similar to the one that you mentioned with West Ham, where you said about Yarmolenko and Anderson and them having too much freedom, not actually tracking back. I think you could level that perhaps at Richarlison, certainly
perhaps.
At the moment.
Take away perhaps.
You know why I say that? Because I watched him against Wolves and he was brilliant.
Yeah, he can do.
Absolutely brilliant. But yes, the rest of the time, you could level that at him. And Sigurdsson as well.
Yeah. That's upsetting, that one. That's very upsetting because he's a fabulous player. And if played in the right position in the 10 role, you know, all the pieces are there.
Yes.
The pieces are all there forever. And that's maybe what's more upsetting than anything else. But Richarlison, even his own, not only the opposition fans, the opposition players, but now his own teammates as well as his own fans are saying, please stand up. Stop throwing yourself at the ground every time anyone comes near you. And it's getting really annoying now because when he does stand up, he's a hell of a good player.
That's a problem that many South Americans have because it's
happy
so...
You said that.
It's true because it's cultural. In South America, nobody blames anyone for diving. It's really cultural. It's really strange for a Brazilian journalist and me or any other Brazilian journalist to see how much people talk about diving here, because in South America, it's completely normal. But you do have to adapt. I've heard, I was talking to Fernandinho one day and he was saying that whenever players come here, we need to like stand up, stop diving. It's bad here. You need to go through this, and maybe Richarlison needs to go through this as well. He likes Marco Silva. He worked with him
at Watford. Why is it not bad in Brazil?
It's cultural. I don't know. It's part of the game, honestly. If you see a Libertadores game...
Doesn't annoy you, you're not like, get up.
Sometimes it does, but it just becomes such a part of the game that it just goes through.
Greatest dive in football history, that would be Rivaldo at the World Cup, no? With the blow to his head.
Turkey. If you ask Brazilians, they will say that Argentinians, they do it better.
Right.
The diving thing,
or worse.
Yes. Yeah. Or worse in this case, yes.
Okay. Everton, you mentioned all the pieces being there. They just need putting in the right order. Anyone who does come in, and I'm not sure who Everton fans would like, would it be Mikel Arteta, will pick up a club who is only 4 points off the drop, but equally only 6 off fifth place, and we're in November, so there's a season that can be rescued there. Who do Everton fans want, Pat?
I think you've made a point. Arteta's probably the head of the line that most of them said. Obviously, he's played at the club before. The style that he's worked under with Pep Guardiola, he's got that experience at Arsenal. All that stuff is in his favour as well. But at the moment, there's a lot of Everton fans that just think, we need to change. We need to get something new. And even if it's a short-term manager, because they've tried a lot of things that have been long-termist in their attitudes, there'll be a long queue for that job. There's enough players, as you say. All the players are there, a capable enough squad to get mid-table and above. But on top of that, they know they've got owners that have got money to spend. That's a good job to get.
All right. Well, also potentially considering a managerial change, meanwhile, are Arsenal. It would be my tip, I think, for the David Moyes appointment. That's my information on that.
I'd go with that one too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a natural fit.
That'd be amazing.
David Moyes, put that one out there.
Unai Emery on borrowed time. Yes. At the Emirates, Jules.
Yeah, of course. I mean, he's not. They still support him. That's what I was told.
The club do.
Yeah, yeah. And they obviously know the results.
Big petition this week from the from supporters.
Yeah, no, I think that the fans are not happy. Unai Emery is not happy himself.
And right.
The people at the club are not happy. They just think that form can improve, maybe results have to improve. He will get the sack if nothing improves.
Uh-huh.
But you know, they think that.
But
between,
it's still not a short term change, you think?
No, I don't think not right now. But then if they lose against Frankfurt on Thursday night, if they lose on Sunday at Norwich,
right?
You know, things are going to get really, really unbearable for him as well. You know, not just at board level.
Right. Fixtures are favourable at the moment.
Yes, that's why I think they're waiting
Norwich.
up to City on December the 15th.
Okay.
They have, I think, five games now, three in the leagues and two in the Europa League, where it's the games that, if you look at them on paper, they should win and they should play better than what they've done.
Okay, although Norwich, not looking quite as easy a fixture as it did a short time ago. They won at Everton last weekend. They've got Krul back.
They're starting to get some players back, yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing that got me about them, and it really confused me, I was at the game at Watford, and they left Cantwell on the bench. And I'm going, he is your one creative force and you left him on the bench. And it didn't seem there was anything lacking in his fitness. He came on and he changed the game and he looked much better. He goes and plays against Everton, scores, plays brilliantly. He's fantastic and him back is going to make a big, big difference. But and if you're Arsenal, you've got to win that one.
Well, have you?
Well, you've got to think you can win that one.
Yeah.
But see, we say favourable fixtures, which is exactly what just came out of my mouth. But if they do lose any of those favourable fixtures, it means that it's probably curtains. I think that draw against Southampton, had they lost that, then there might have been a temptation to try and find someone quickly. But I think with the fixtures they've got now, maybe we'll get through
that's
Christmas.
The thing, Lindsay, as you say, they just took on another of the teams in the bottom three and very nearly lost, and that was at home. Away to Norwich while they're recovering from their jet lag from the flight and all that kind of thing. Who knows what could happen at Carrow Road? I'm calling this one as a really risky fixture for Arsenal. And by the way, the manager who they
Stop
have...
Stop it. Shh.
I was getting into that.
No, I'm happy with David Moyes, Jimbo. We'll talk about David Moyes, Allegri. We could throw that in there.
That's why you're such a big fan. You're trying to move the conversation away.
I don't want any of this. I don't want any of this conversation coming towards Nuno at Wolves. Go away,
Nuno,
Everton,
Wolves.
Arsenal.
Really? Has he been linked with the Arsenal?
That's a thought, James. What do you think of that?
That would be an amazing. Yeah. Any club would be delighted to get a hold of Nuno at Wolves. But what's the situation there? Is he on a 6-year deal? How easy would it be to
He's
prize
very
him
happy.
Away? Is he?
I'm confident that he's extremely happy with the project at Wolves.
All right, well, we'll talk about that Wolves project and what awaits them this weekend after this. Hey, listen, I hope you've been enjoying this Tootley Football Show so far. Still loads to come. We're going to talk about Copa Libertadores. Natalie, very excited about Flamengo winning that. Jules, you're all up about the Euro draw. That's on Saturday. It hasn't happened yet, so it's going to be interesting to hear your thoughts on.
Yeah, because France will be in the group of death.
That's
pretty
right.
Much so. They're in pot two. So
just by being in it, it's the group of death.
Yeah, because you don't expect a team like that to be in pot
Absolutely.
Two usually. So, you know, they will have to play England, Germany or someone like that.
All right.
Sure.
Here's another thing we should mention. Pat, you've been nominated for an award. It's the Football Supporters Association Pundit of the Year 2019.
Ooh.
All right.
Nice. I think it's a typo.
Well, the competition for you, Pat, in your category, there are other categories, including Best Podcast. But anyway, the competition for you is Gary Neville, serial winner Gary Neville, Ian Wright, who's currently going hungry in the jungle, Alex Scott, Andy Hinchcliffe, and Jamie Carragher.
That's why I think it's a typo.
All right.
Because I'm the only one that doesn't do telly. Well,
yeah, no, Lindsay, you and I will both be there. You're going to be the
voice of God.
The announcer for the FSA
you
Awards.
Too.
Yeah. Oh, I did this last year. It was
a
great link-up.
Handing out the awards for Best Pundit. It's a terrific night,
yeah.
Pat. There's always a special moment for me when I hand out the podcast award to...
yourself?
No, that's the problem. No. That is the problem.
No, it's nice to meet old friends. And anyway, if you have a view on how the outcomes of the various categories, like male and female player and all that kind of thing, should go, listener, then do get along to thefsa.org and cast your vote. You have until Saturday, the 30th of November, to do it. FPL Doctor, hello to you. FPL Doctor says, read those Nuno to Arsenal rumours. Even as an Arsenal fan, I can't see why Nuno would swap. Wolves have money and long-term vision. Arsenal have neither. Huh, how about that, Lindsay?
Mm.
Wolves this weekend also have Sheffield United.
Yeah. If you saw the press conference in the lead-up to this match, Chris Wilder was saying how Sheffield United would be delighted if they followed the Wolves project and actually managed to replicate what we've done. It has been a superb couple of years at Molineux, I have to say, and Nuno is key to all of it. I'm convinced that we've got to, with all of our might, hold on to him for dear life. And Chris Wilder, I think, is just as good a manager. In fact, let's deflect it onto him. Why all isn't right. anyone talking about Chris Wilder
well,
for these
jobs? Let's talk about Chris Wilder. Natalie, you saw the Blades in action against
yes.
Man United last Sunday.
Yes, and I think it's funny how some people underestimate Chris Wilder's work. They say he can be a little bit of old-fashioned guy in terms of choices and tactics and things like that. But if you see Sheffield United playing, and they are very organized, they're very aware of everything that they need to do on the pitch, and the fans just adore Chris Wilder, and he has a big appeal with the players too, so everything's working really well for Sheffield United.
And who would have thought that this match was for top six place?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
That's what it's been billed as now. It's, you know, whoever wins this will maintain their spot in the top six.
So Wolves, the best of the rest after the top four currently. There's that massive gap of 7 points between Chelsea in fourth and Wolves in fifth. And then a point behind them are Sheffield United, tied with Burnley and plucky underdogs Arsenal.
Interesting to think Sheffield United at Europa League.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Burnley had been in it. Could
yeah.
be again this time.
It affected them badly, though.
Wolves are in it right now, Natalie.
Yes.
In fact, right now, they're probably in Braga.
Hopefully getting 1 point or more and then being through. But that's the same for Braga. They just need 1 point as well.
All right. Well, if everyone's sensible...
Nuno and his mates. Surely make that happen.
A player okay. that we're missing for this one on Sunday against Sheffield United is Romain Saiss, who's been quite key. He's been a player that Nuno's gone to a lot in the absence because Ryan Bennett's still out. So you do think that someone like Max Kilman might come in, and that might be an area
what
that...
What position are we talking about?
This is in defence.
Right.
And this could be an area that Chris Wilder looks to exploit because it's not a setback three. You know, when we've had Bolly back in the side as well. So Chris Wilder, I am a little bit fearful because he's a great tactician, and at home, you know, we don't want to be beaten at home.
Well,
if it was away, I would say that Sheffield United would be favourites going into
Sheffield
this,
United have one or two doubts of their own over, well, at least Muset, for example.
Yeah. You know, but Raul Jimenez has been playing so well,
hasn't
in
he,
the
though?
Last few weeks.
Wow.
It's fantastic.
It is great. Do you know who else has got a bit of a trip in the Europa League Thursday night? Man United, that's who have a round trip to Astana. That is 7,500 kilometres.
It is, yeah.
Oh, my word. When they get back from that, they're going to be at home to Villa. That's Sunday afternoon. Villa.
Yeah, but about Man United.
Yes.
Most of them will rest because from the 18-man squad that is travelling, 14 teenagers. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They're just sending the kids?
Yes, they are.
Oh,
10 yet
Netflix.
To play for Man United. So
it'll actually be a really rested Man United first team.
Exactly,
Sunday
yeah.
afternoon, who take on Aston Villa. Villa, who themselves played, well, Monday night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they played well as well.
They ended
Newcastle.
A run of three straight defeats with a victory against Newcastle. A couple of set pieces.
I love watching them. I love their attitude. They've got the players. McGinn, I kind of almost look at him as an adopted son. You know, right. He's a fabulous, fabulous player, and you can't help but love him for his attitude. But Hourihane, yeah, Grealish has been brilliant as well. Just the way they play football is a joy. I'd be devastated if they didn't go on a bit of a run now and get away from that kind of relegation area. I think they're a fabulous team to watch.
Why are they down there alongside the Evertons and your West Hams?
I wish I knew. I think somebody too. I've watched some of their games. To be honest, you give them three more points and they're up mid-table, right?
Well, that's
and there's
the
been
thing.
A lot
they
of
lost,
games.
Yeah. The game like they lost to Arsenal, for example.
Exactly.
It's a game they should have never lost. Right. I think they were a bit naive, maybe. I think they panicked a little bit when Arsenal came back. And
right.
It's that kind of Premier League experience that not many players in that team would have had, you know, enough maybe, and I think they're learning. It's a learning curve.
Let's move on, because Newcastle, fresh from that spanking away at Villa Park, will be back home at St James's on Saturday lunchtime, the opening kickoff of the round, in which they take on Man City. Sounds like a tough fixture, but who won this one last year, Natalie? It was the Magpies. 2-1.
Were you there? Yes, I was there.
What was that? We've talked about big atmospheres at grounds.
Yes.
What was that like?
Yes. No, it was amazing. And it was really remarkable for Pep Guardiola. He mentioned this match a few times, because after the Newcastle match, he would never guess that City would start a run of wins and win the title. He said that recently. And it was a tricky match. Fernandinho did a penalty. He didn't do well, and he was doing well in that season. Everything went wrong for
right.
City on second half.
Did you see much of City's game midweek against Shakhtar Donetsk?
Yeah, I saw some of
it. What did you make of it? Because they seemed really flat in that game.
Yes, exactly. I think we had high expectations in terms of performance, especially attacking. But didn't quite fulfill our expectations. I don't know. Gabriel wasn't in his best form. I think he performed better in other matches. And there is this expectation around him now that Sergio Aguero's injured.
Mm.
So yeah, it was a bit flat. You're absolutely right.
He had one of the worst displays I've ever seen from a fullback at that level of football. Angelino is playing left back. Now, help me with the history here, because as someone who played in the wing an entire career, I'm looking at him thinking, are you actually having a laugh, mate? That is not where you stand. You don't actually seem to know where to stand when the ball
is. This the Liverpool game?
No, the Shakhtar game.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Bad defending from him.
But he got no help whatsoever.
But Pep's all about positioning.
I know, but Pep was actually over the other side. This is on the far side in the first half, so Pep couldn't get the information across to him. And what was intriguing, and I asked Natalie for her help a little bit here, Shakhtar had two players on the right wing, Tite, mm-hmm. who's young Brazilian, and Dodo. And the pace of them too. And they were up against Angelino. And he was just absolutely all over the place. They could have scored four or five goals in that position in the first half, and did score the goal in the second half. They've got a massive problem at left-back Manchester City, and everybody's got to see that now.
Right. Newcastle have pace, don't they?
Alan Saint-Maximin.
Saint-Maximin. Yeah. That's what
you
he's got.
Love him, yeah. And the skills. He's very, good. Very, very skillful tricks and stuff. He's just not sure what to do exactly with the ball. So he tries a lot of things. He's a very, very entertaining player to watch.
Yes.
He's a lovely kid. He used to play with a Gucci headband back in France. And the Premier League banned him from using it.
No.
Yeah, so now he's using a normal black, because he's got obviously dreadlocks.
Okay, he might have a rainbow one this weekend.
Maybe,
Rainbow laces.
Nice. That would be great.
I have a suspicion he will score goal of the season this season.
I wouldn't be surprised.
When you say goal of the season, you mean his one goal of the season?
No, everyone's. Because he gets close to scoring the goal of the season most weeks.
Okay.
And then blows it right at the end.
Right.
But one of these weeks he's going to take it round five and then smash it in the top corner. It's going to be great.
Will Miguel Almiron ever score? He's now on 22 shots this season without scoring. Of course, he arrived last January.
I feel for him.
He was so good in MLS.
Isn't he one of those players that you really want to do well?
No, I like him, but I don't want it.
You don't like him?
No, I do like him, but
so why don't you want him to do well?
Because that's his role in the story.
Of course. It will come to an end, all those curse stories.
I don't think he'll ever score there.
He's not a goal scorer. I mean, he's called in MLS. He was a creative player in MLS. He's a creative player, first and foremost. He's a playmaker. So, it's not like if he was a striker who used to score 60 goals a season.
Did he play football or futsal? He looks like a futsal player.
Really?
And that sounds like a really derogatory thing. It's not. Futsal
it is towards MLS, but...
But he plays like a futsal player. Mm. You know, so the skills are absolutely brilliant. So,
right. I can see that.
Yeah, and he, there's other leagues that he can move to that he will
futsal
be utterly
leagues.
Brilliant. Well, football leagues as well, and some European leagues he'll be brilliant.
Right.
But you're looking at a Premier League and not sure it's ever going to work, really. Okay.
There was another stat doing the rounds from one of your contributors on the... It might have been either... It was either Daniel Story or Duncan Alexander.
Yeah,
and they were talking about Sterling...
Yes.
And without Aguero, and that there's this big myth that people think that without Aguero, Sterling doesn't perform as well. But apparently, I can't remember the exact stat. It was something like 49 of the 63 goals he scored have been with Jesus.
Right.
Something like that.
Well, what I can tell you, Lindsay, is that Sergio Aguero, although a big absence for Man City, has only been involved in one of their last 16 goals.
Well, that just usurps it, doesn't it? Stick with yours.
All right.
Okay.
And Sterling hasn't been that great in the last three games anyway.
Yeah.
Chelsea, Liverpool and...
I'm thinking of sticking with him.
Shakhtar. All right. So just on a numerical point of view, that Magpies win last season in this fixture, they had two shots, scored from both of them, and 27% possession. So easily replicable as a performance.
Yeah, but the manager has changed. That's the big problem.
Ah.
Do you know what? Nobody's really hammering them that much. I mean, the Villa was at 2-0, but before that, they're kind of well-structured, well-organised.
Was it two wins before that?
West Ham get the win. Mm. Look, they're not brilliant. They can't score goals. They've not got a striker that scores goals.
Right.
It's a real shame. It's going to be a real problem for them, but actually they're well-structured now.
For the moment, anyway, they are above the likes of your Aston Villa and Everton and West Ham and that. We'll see what happens after this weekend, which also sees Burnley all the way up in seventh place, taking on Crystal Palace. Burnley coming off back-to-back 3-0 wins. The Eagles currently struggling, only 1 point from the last five matches for them. And also, Saturday tea time, a battle of the bottom two as Saints take on Watford. Just 1 win in 9 for Saints, but they looked really dangerous against Arsenal, and they've got better fixtures coming up. Danny Ings. Mm. Hey, Jules, yes. Danny Ings.
Yes. Danny Ings who scored and did well against Arsenal, who is actually in a good form. I mean, that was all my theory when we did the fantasy football podcast last week, is that every chance comes to him because he's the only one who can score goals for them. So they have creative player or enough creative in Buffal when he comes on, in Redmond, obviously, and the others. And, you know, that could have a positive impact, I think, on
the
Ings.
Southampton players play Fantasy League, by the way. I was talking to Jack Stevens this week and he said he's putting Danny Ings in his team. They have a little
Jules
league.
Jules put it in last week.
I got a message from Jimbo saying, you're incredible.
Yeah. And I send that him, most weeks to be
I sent to him and so are you because he brought in Raul Jimenez.
Yeah, which is kind of obvious.
Well, that was obvious.
Well, let's not do fancy chat. There's a podcast for that, but Jules brought him in and he repaid you with his sixth goal in six fixtures. Troy Deeney could be back in the starting lineup, which would be huge for Watford, and they need a result because after this game they've got away at Liverpool, Leicester, and then home to Palace and Man United. Ay, 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 ay.
But you should also point out the fixtures the other side as well for Southampton, because...
Dead easy, aren't they?
Dead easy. And you think that this is a huge defining period for the club because you've got Watford, Norwich, Newcastle then away afterwards. Wow. And of course, home form hasn't been good for Saints, so that they need to get that confidence boost by winning at home.
Very, very true.
Can I wind up a player, Nicky? I'm here to wind up one or two players.
Okay.
The only players I get annoyed with are players that are very, very good players that are underperforming because they're not trying hard enough and not doing the right things. I give you Gerard Deulofeu. Honestly, I watched him the other night against the Watford against Norwich game, and there's very few players that do this in world football. Every time he makes a pass, he stands. He doesn't do anything. He stands. He doesn't go and make a move for his mate. He doesn't do a 1-2. He plays a pass and then he stops and he stands there for 5 or 6 seconds. You should be fined for that. There are games you do in training where if you play a pass and then don't move, you get a free kick against you. It does it all the time, and it's the most self-indulgent thing. And unless your name is Ibra, then I don't think you're allowed to do it.
Super. Let's now get the odds on some of those Premier League games this weekend. Here's producer Ben speaking to Paddy Power.
Thank you very much, Jimbo. Lee Price from Paddy Power is on the line. And Lee, let's talk about the big game this weekend. It's the battle for fifth, and it's surprisingly between Sheffield United and Wolves. What's going to happen here, please?
God, I don't want to write Sheffield United off, but our traders appear to have. Wolves 10-11 to win this. Sheffield United are 16-5, and the draw is 23-10. I wonder if Nuno will be in charge for this game. It's odds on that he's the next Arsenal boss, with Unai Emery under massive pressure and 1-2 to be the next Premier League boss to leave. He may already have.
Well, you just mentioned Unai Emery and Arsenal there, Lee. Marco Silva at Everton and Pellegrini over at West Ham also in enormous amounts of trouble. But what are the odds, please, on Arsenal, Everton and West Ham all getting a victory this weekend?
Well, let's start with the positive one. Arsenal are odds on favourites to beat Norwich. They're 4-5 to do that. The other two we're less confident about. Everton are 4-1 to win against Leicester, who are the 8-13 favourites there, while West Ham are 9-1 to win at Chelsea, who are 1-4 to get the 3 points in that game. Put those three together, Arsenal, Everton and West Ham all to win, unlikely as it seems, 89-1.
And finally, we never talk about Burnley. What are the markets saying, please, about Sean Dyche's men scoring three for the third game running when they take on Crystal Palace?
Right, so no, okay. Burnley actually to score three goals isn't a crazy price. I thought you may have been joking, but it's 9-2 they score at least three goals in this game. That could be a lot longer. And both teams are odds on to score here, so it could be a bit of a belter. We make the Clarets favourite to win at 6-5, Palace are 12-5.
You can find out those odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Now, there's a Totally Football League show out at the moment, which is a pretty Leeds-heavy edition. But they've got some chat in there about Middlesbrough and Ipswich and apparently what is the best meat to have for a roast dinner. If you don't fancy that, then there's always the offside rule, which features, Lindsay, you chatting to John Barnes.
Not me. This is Kate Borsay, who I do the podcast with. So she went up to Liverpool and from what I gather, it was a very lengthy chat, which has John's had to be... really condensed.
Yeah, he's a loquacious fella, but a guy with a very original line of thought and a lovely chat as well. Okay, well, you can find out all the details on the offside rule, and that's out at the moment.
Yes. Good. Tomorrow.
Oh, okay. If it's tomorrow where you are, listener, then it's out. All right, Natalie. So we had all that chat about stadiums and incredible atmosphere and that. Yes. And you must have been thinking, these people, they should go to South America and check out some real grounds.
It's completely different, yeah. Right. I know. I try not to compare because it's just different.
What's the loudest venue you've ever been to in, I don't know, Brazil?
Oh, in Brazil.
Because, I mean, you had the Monumental in Lima hosting the Copa Libertadores this last Saturday.
Yes, yes. I covered a match there once. No, it's interesting stadium. And Libertadores is always something. It's completely different atmosphere, even compared to the Brazilian National League or the Argentinian National League. Libertadores is something else. And we were expecting a amazing atmosphere, not expecting how the match turned out to be. Flamengo were considered favorites. I don't see... why they were so favorites, because River has been doing a long-term job with Gallardo, the manager, for a very long time. But Flamengo, they changed everything, and they are changing the standards, the patterns in Brazilian football, because today you see Flamengo and no team can compare in terms of club management, signings. They are very organized now. Flamengo used to be known as a very disorganized club in general. Everything was a mess there. And now they're completely the opposite. They invested in a manager that it was out of the choices that clubs usually do. They usually go for the same Brazilian managers, and they went and pick Jorge Jesus, which was amazing. So he brought new ideas to Brazilian football, and it's very well deserved. Well done for Flamengo.
It's very much a European team, more than a South American team. And I think the World Cup... the Club World Cup final will be Liverpool Flamengo. There's no way they're not going to qualify, and I think that would be a very interesting game, because I think in that final maybe 7 of the 11 Flamengo players had played in Europe before, not all to the top level, but so a lot of them are very much like Felipe Luis, like Rafinha, for example.
Yes.
I mean, Gabigol as well, Diego as well. So it would really feel like in a way, kind of a Champions League match for Liverpool.
And of course, Jorge Jesus, because he
Jorge
managed
Jesus
it,
the
yes.
manager, yeah, so.
It's incredible end to the game anyway. I mean, some people might not have watched, you know, and found out what happened at the end of the game, but it's a stunning end to the game. But the bit that got me, I'm going to cheat a little bit on you here, because I did look it up, What's the last Brazilian team to actually win the Copa Libertadores and their own title in the same season? It's so unusual because it's a long time since, you know, Brazil haven't been winning that competition that often, have they? The Copa Libertadores.
Santos?
Correct! I believe in the year I was born, so that's how many millions...
Good Lord, it was that Santos team.
It was Pelé's team.
Good Lord.
It was Pelé's team.
Because that was kind of interesting as well. They picked up the Brasileirão title the next day.
Yes,
because
yes,
without
they were,
playing.
They weren't playing.
Right.
Yeah, so that's happy weekend for Flamengo.
Will they beat Liverpool, do you think, in Qatar?
Oh, they are highly motivated. And I think motivation is a big factor here because I know World Club Championship is not a huge thing for European sides in general, but it is a huge thing for South Americans. So the motivations are just...
And they won't play. Liverpool have, as we said...
Yes.
You know,
yes, season's over in Brazil.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's a good thing to have that long. When will the game be? So late December?
So mid-December they will go there and have semi-final.
Yeah,
right.
The
so it's about 3 weeks
20th.
At least without playing. I'm not sure if that's an advantage.
No, I think it is because it's been a long season for Flamengo,
right.
So they will need some rest, yeah.
Okay, all right then. Now, that's almost it for today's edition of the Totally Football Show. Pat, I know you've got a gig tonight. Where are you off to?
I'm going to call it CAS, Cigarettes After Sex.
Oh, right, them.
Great.
All right. Exciting.
I love how many gigs Pat goes to.
Pat goes to gigs all brilliant. The time. Yeah. Lindsay, on the other hand, has promised she's going to finish off the show with a very special fancy dress story.
Oh, God.
So if you love dressing up as much as I do, listener, you'll enjoy this from Lindsay Hooper.
Oh, no, this is because you talked about fancy dress earlier before we recorded the show.
What did I say about fancy dress?
Somebody dressing up as a bear.
Simon, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah. And that was before we recorded. And I just said, I have got a good fancy dress story. This was told at my friend's wedding. So, Anna, shout out to you. When I was at university, my friend Anna turned 21 and she had a fancy dress party and everyone went to something beginning with A. And I was an astronaut. I had tinfoil and a goldfish bowl around my head. And there was Animal from the Muppets and Adamant and people like that. And we had a house party, but I went to Loughborough University and it's a university town. So there's not much going on there, but one nightclub. And we decided we wanted the party to go on. And I'd noticed when we moved in that there had been a car parked next door because we were next to just normal neighbours, residents, but we were in a studenty street. And it said 24-hour taxi on the side. So it's Saturday night. We know there's no way we're going to get a taxi just on a whim. But I noticed that the car's on the drive. So it's about 10:30 and I knock the door and somebody comes down in their pyjamas and I realise, oh, no, they're in bed. So I said, it's fine, leave it. We just thought that because it says 24-hour taxi, we've got three journeys. It might have been a bit of money for you going into the nightclub. It's my friend's birthday. Anyway, this wife in her dressing gown gestured to her husband and he ran out. And I went, oh, no, I didn't want to get you up. No, it's no problem. So he pulls the car out and I send the birthday girl in the first car. So she goes off and I'm organising locking up and I send the second lot off. And then I get a text message saying he wouldn't take any money. And I thought, oh, we've woken him up. We've got to give this man some money. So I'm a student and I've not got very much, but thankfully I had a £10 note extra. So I had that in my pocket, locked up, final one, get in and can't see a meter. And he drives, so he's done three journeys there and back, probably taken about 45 minutes. And as I go to get out, he goes, no, it's fine. I went, no. And I, thank goodness, threw in this extra £10 note. And the next morning, we're all hungover. We get up about after midday, as you do as a student. And my friend, who was the birthday girl, said, we've got no milk to get some teas, do a round of teas and coffees for everybody in the morning. Would you mind just walking down to the shop? Absolutely no problem. So I walk, saunter down, go and get the milk, come back up, just glance at my neighbour's drive and see 24-hour plumber.
He's not a taxi driver.
He wasn't a taxi driver.
So why did he give you a lift?
Because he was the kindest man on earth.
Also, I mean, I've got a lot to...
I've got loads of questions.
A lot of questions. Maybe you do too, listener. But what does this have to do with fancy dress?
Because I was dressed as an astronaut. You have to also have the image that he's taking this pile of people dressed as an astronaut. Adam Ant, Animal from the Muppets.
Right.
There was Anastasia, lots of different fancy
dress. Well, I mean, plumbers are a famously nice bunch, but that's probably the nicest plumber around.
The nicest plumber.
Right, and his wife.
Oh, no, I know, bless them. If they remember that story.
Your photograph memory is clearly very good.
It was just that standout moment where you're never going to forget.
24-hour plumber, not taxi.
Is dressing up a big thing in Brazil and things like that? Oh yeah, yes, so, you have.
Yes, we have carnival. Yeah. But I always manage to avoid it.
Right. So there you go. On that note, many thanks then to Lindsay and Natalie, to Pat and Julianne for being with us today, a new listener. We've got another show coming up on Monday looking back on all the action, so do make sure you join us for that. In the meantime, have a great weekend and goodbye from us all.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.